Welcome back to the TV Talk Machine podcast, episode 37. We're back. Tim is in Austin, Texas right now drinking beer, but we've pre-taped this episode so that we can continue our streak, 37 straight weeks with podcasting.
37 weeks. Damn. This is alternative universe Tim speaking.
Yeah.
Hi. I do not taste the tacos or the queso or the beer yet, but
no.
I will.
You will.
I will
be you doing are. That. You should taste them right now because you are having them right now, all at once, while this podcast is being broadcast worldwide, distribution to all corners of the world, as we always do here on the TVTM.
It's kind of an Orphan Black situation. Mm-hmm. I can just clone myself.
That's
I'm
right.
Here.
Podcast Tim, and then there's taco and beer Tim.
Oh, I love that guy.
That guy's having a good time.
I love that guy.
We should talk. So there's shows that you're not, because you're out and about, there are shows that you're not covering for The Hollywood Reporter that we should probably mention are coming. I know one that I've been, there are a couple that I've been tracking. There are a lot of nerdy shows here, I guess I should say, which is why I've been tracking them, because that's what I do. But also Odd Mom Out, which I've not been tracking. But that's a show that's coming, right?
That is a show that's totally coming. This is great. That's there, and a bunch of them that I'm not watching.
That's the 8th. So that's like Monday. Odd Mom Out is coming on Bravo.
Are you excited about that?
I no.
Mm.
No. This is. Have you seen it?
No.
You haven't seen it.
Yeah. Here's the problem. When I decide that I'm not going to do it, I don't do it. And then I only, this is a little inside baseball. Actually, this is part of a panel. This is meta. This is super meta right now. This idea is part of a panel that I'll be doing in Austin. And that is, we're going to be talking about to TV critics about little secrets of the trade and things that they do and how the sausage gets made in our business. And one of my things is that if I pass on a show, I never revisit it unless it pops into the zeitgeist. Because there's so many shows like, is gone. No one cares. Aquarius, right?
Right.
Did I have to watch that? No.
But Tim, in the week since we recorded this episode, Aquarius has become the next breakout hit. Not going to happen. But no, if you were gone somewhere, if you'd like slipped into a light coma when Mad Men had premiered, you would have had to catch up.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, those are the ones. And you do, right? And this,
but you have a sense, don't you? You have a pretty good sense that if it's something that has a chance of being in the zeitgeist, you'll probably look at it, right?
And definitely.
Odd Mom Out just didn't set off your critic sense like that?
It did not really at all. And you know, we had to make these calls because, you know, that's like I said, that's the world we're in right now. There's not enough time.
It's times of confusion. Even for TV critics.
Tons of confusion. And we just have to make the tough cuts. And my editor, John, and I have gone through this list. And I didn't want to give up Sense8. That's coming, right?
Yep.
That's the thing you're looking forward to.
One of those nerdy shows, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that could maybe be a thing. It's the Wachowskis, although they haven't done so great in film recently.
Yeah, Sense8 and J. Michael Straczynski, who I love from back in the day from Babylon 5, back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
And he's made quite a career as a film screenwriter lately. And this is his sort of return to TV. And he knows sci-fi TV, and the Wachowskis know this kind of subject matter as well. And they paid a lot of money. It's like shot all over the world. They shot it in kind of unconventional. Intentionally in big blocks in different parts of the world. And the whole idea is like 8 people find themselves with these like mental connections to each other. Mm-hmm. And why did that happen and what the story is. The trailer is very exciting. So that's, I think today, as this episode goes out, is when it is dropping on Netflix. If not, it's in the next couple of days. So it's very soon.
I think you're right. Yeah, it's June 5th.
Yeah, that's
woo-hoo.
Today.
That's the day, baby.
Tacos and beer in Austin and Sense8 on your Netflix.
So that could be a thing that it's happening. I will check back on that show if
I'll
it
let
takes
you know.
Off.
I'll let you know. I'll watch that and report back to you.
And then there's, just for clarity's sake, there are those situations where there's an asterisk placed on that idea because would I ever have a reason to go and see CSI Cyber? Again, never, except for the fact that now it's funny.
Yeah, but that's the, there is that.
We're kind of keeping it alive and creating work for me.
In fact, you could say that it's a thing because we made it a thing by saying it's not a thing.
By saying it's not a thing. It's now a thing.
That's our power that we have. Oh my God. Dark Matter is coming out. That's sci-fi, right?
Yes, Dark Matter is coming. You already talked about Odd Mom Out, which is really important.
Odd Mom Out is on Bravo. I guess what's interesting about Odd Mom Out is that it's the second Bravo original after what, Girlfriend's Guide to Divorce, which you liked.
I did like it, yeah. And it's, you know, it could be a thing. Who knows, right? I mean, that's their second. It's their second scripted thing. They did very well on the first one. I think they took their time on this, so we'll see. Yeah. Like I said, if it pops up and it's something, I'll watch it. But yeah, Dark Matter.
It's from a bunch of the people who did Stargate, which I liked back in the day. I think that it got old after a while. The franchise got tired. They over-franchised it, but those guys who ran most of the Stargate shows at the end, and they're shooting in Vancouver, so there'll be a lot of evergreen forests because that's what happens when you do a show there.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about it. It's based on a comic book, but I'll give it a look because I like the sci-fi shows. The Sci-Fi Channel has really embraced its name again after some years where it was doing kind of like those Blue Sky USA shows and a bunch of reality shows about paranormal things. They've really gone back to embracing more spacey kind of stuff like this and The Expanse, which is coming in December, which I'm really excited about. But I'll definitely check this out. So here's another nerdy show that I will report back on.
That's totally in your wheelhouse. I'm glad that you're doing it.
That's June 12th on Sci-Fi.
June 12th, Friday. And if it's based on the Dark Horse comics, if that rings a bell for anybody. And it's written by Joseph Malozzi and Paul Mulley.
Stargate guys.
Same day, by the way, on June 12th will be.
Oh, by the way, it's shot in Toronto, so it's going to have. So that means it's urban, and so there won't be evergreen forest. Instead, there will be gray concrete, because that's really in Canada. You shoot it in Toronto, and you get the gray concrete. That's Orphan Black, or you shoot it in Vancouver, and you get the some bridges and some water and evergreen trees. Those are the two things that are in Canada. As far as
I love it, I love my friends in the north. They're
love
great.
Canada. I love Canada. Mm-hmm. They're very nice.
I'm sort of adopting them.
Sorry, Canada, for mixing up Vancouver and Toronto.
Very good. Right. I get that. I get what you did just there.
And then across the pond, BBC America is importing Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell from the BBC.
Yes. And that is seven parts.
Yeah. So this is a great example where they've taken a book that I read. It's a book by Susanna Clarke. Called Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, 1,000-page book, really good book, but a large book, and they're adapting it in a single 7-part series, and so that's what we've got is this, and this is like a big budget BBC One production that's also running on BBC America, and the writer is Peter Harness, who's really good. He wrote some Doctor Who's that were good, so I'm looking forward to Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, because it's about magic. I don't want to say it's fantasy. It's fantasy like Harry Potter is fantasy, right, in the sense that it's about people doing magic, but it's not about like wizards with, you know, dragons and things like that. It's not that kind of magic. It's about the you know, sort of like 19th century English people where there's no magic, and then there are these magicians, but all the magicians are just like people who studied when there used to be magic, and then suddenly these guys appear who actually know how to do magic, and where'd that come from, and what's the backstory there, and it's really, really was a great book, so I'm enjoying I'm looking forward to the BBC adaptation. I haven't watched it.
And I saw like a 15 minute cut down of it.
Right.
Really interesting. Yeah. It was looked, you know, I didn't read the book, obviously, but books. But I was surprised that the 19th century setting of it is really kind of makes it, it's interesting in that way. And then when you actually see the use of magic and how they do it, I thought to myself, okay, I'm interested. I don't know if that's my show, because it's definitely... You got to buy in, right? There's an opt-in part
to
it. Sure. I mean, there's a great scene that I don't know if you saw anything, any clips at all, but this is a great scene where one of the two magicians does a thing where he like casts his hand down into the sand on this beach and creates this enormous crack that basically gets out into the ocean and I believe rights a ship that's about to go over and blow up. And just the use of that, I was like, oh, okay, well, maybe, because that wasn't cheap to do. That looks pretty cool. So I might be in on that one.
Yeah, it's and for people who haven't read the book like you, I would say, because I think it was a pretty good seller, but if people are familiar with Neil Gaiman and the stuff that he's written, or even the adaptations of stuff that he's written, it's in that kind of vein too, a little bit. It feels very Neil Gaiman-y to me. It's a really good book. People
She only has one, right? Susanna Clarke.
Yeah, I believe
so. I wonder if she's going to turn that into a series.
I don't know. I haven't checked. When I read it, it was just the only one. So huh. I don't know if there's a sequel. Apparently, she's working on a sequel.
Oh, okay.
But
good.
That's it.
All right.
So there's that, and then later in June, of course, at the end of the month. So we'll have podcasts between then and now, is when James Patterson's Zoo debuts, which I have said that I would watch, and we'll find out if it's a thing or not.
Oh my God. Yes. There's a lot we can really put you on.
Yeah. Oh no. Mm-hmm. I get the sense that I'm just at the top of a very, very steep downhill slope.
Yes.
With bad shows between me and the bottom.
But also some good stuff. Like what if Dark Matter turns out and Jonathan Strange, you're
and
clearly
Sensei,
the perfect one.
Those three I'm watching regardless. So right. I'll definitely report back on those. But then James Patterson Zoo, you know.
Well, what I love about that is those are the three that I'm ignoring. So it's mm-hmm. actually, it's no extra work. It's like you're doing my work.
No, you and I have this nice thing where you blow off a lot of the sci-fi shows that I want to watch, so then I can watch them and tell you what's the deal with them. So,
yeah, because I'll go back. I just you know, I'm still scarred by stuff like Defiance.
Yeah,
you know, which is happening, and now it's going to be in its third season.
Yeah, I don't
same
get
night
that.
As Dark Matter.
I don't get that.
Yeah,
that's not one that I really ever understood.
Orange is the New Black, which I will be doing, is also on June 12th, by the way.
All
people
right.
are fans of that.
That's it. And we're back then. That'll be next week's show. So we'll plug it some more.
We'll be talking all about that next week.
Amazing. But since this is the, you know, since you're in Austin and also mm-hmm. here as a clone, I thought we would go to the listener feedback.
Ooh, do.
To go heavy on the listener feedback this time.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of your Secrets of the Trade that you mentioned earlier, listener John in the 212.
Yeah, New York.
NYC, yeah.
Wow.
Says, Tim, do you really want to go on record with the "you couldn't pay me to watch that"? Your employers might have something to say about it.
Yeah, given that they are actually paying me to watch that's a tough one. Well, I mean, we have a pretty good understanding. That's the great thing about it. We have a pretty, I mean, and it's not, I'm not like a drone.
Yeah.
I actually have some say in it. And we have a pretty good setup because we have enough people who do freelance for our unscripted series. And as we know, there's about a billion of those on television, including June 13th, The Man with No Penis. Just thought I'd put that out
there.
All
right. Thank you.
Yeah. Good reminder.
Good. Check that out.
In case anybody had tried to block that out of their brain last week.
Call back to last week.
Mm-hmm. So
TLC.
You can
get that on TLC.
I skip all of those things. And so technically they are not paying me to watch that, but they are paying me to watch scripted stuff. So I do go back and do that, but you know, they understand they can't watch it all. And there's just some stuff I refuse to watch.
In these times of confusion, there's just too much for you to review anyway. So they have to,
total ball of confusion.
You have to load some of that stuff off on someone else. We'll call them a freelancer. You could also call them a sucker, but you know,
times of confusion,
you could pay them to watch it.
We are actually paying them to watch it, and they want that money. That's good.
They
That's
do?
Good. Mm-hmm. We're helping the economy.
It's good. That's good. You're growing the economy. Thank you, Tim. Kate from the 202. So that's DC, right?
Yes. I want to be Kate.
Nice Ben Folds reference there.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Love that song.
Plays Wipeout on the drums. Oh, that's a great song. Love that song.
If my name was Kate, I would be singing. I'd be shouting that all the time.
Yeah.
I want
absolutely.
To be Kate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you wouldn't, because you would be Kate.
I would be Kate, but then I'd be so excited to be Kate. I would
and have
a, I've
and,
seen that
and have that song. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
All right. That's good.
Yeah, it's kind of like Hobo Eric.
Yeah. Right? Okay, not a hobo. Kate in the 202.
No, not a hobo.
Says, and this is great. She says, "Please, Jason, save us from 500 questions and review how the convoluted show, our quest, and geniuses are so not a thing." Now I had to look this up. I had to look this up. It turns out, Tim, that your friend and mine, Richard Quest.
Oh,
of CNN.
Yes,
he
does.
The excitable Englishman mm-hmm. has a game show called 500 Questions, where you have to answer 500 questions without missing, I think, three in a row at any point.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I have not seen it. I can't explain it. I don't know if it's a thing or not. I have to say, I'm actually kind of intrigued now, because I kind of love Richard Quest because he's crazy. And when you're watching a CNN at 2 a.m. and they've just got this crazy Englishman on from London because there's nobody awake in Atlanta. I grew to really enjoy Richard Quest.
He was an oddball. Yeah. I think that he became a thing, right? Kind of like Riley Curry. He became a thing. Sure. And then I think he kind of played to it, and then he lost its appeal.
And then he lost the appeal. Oh, yeah, that would be too bad. That's too bad. Because I knew him when he was just this oddball in the middle of the night, and that was good. Those were good times.
Those were good times. Discovering, like, what the hell is this guy all about, and why is he on TV?
That was before they had completely ruined CNN.
It's a disaster.
It's Jeff Zucker. It's the magic touch. Did I say magic? Magic is not the touch of Jeff
Zucker. He's not on Jonathan Strange or Mr. Norrell.
No, there's no magic with Jeff Zucker. He's the man who continues to fail upward.
Mm-hmm.
He's got an anti-gravity. That's his power.
It's amazing.
Amazing. So Marina from the 734. That's a new area code, I think.
Oh, what is that? I know a Marina.
That's Michigan.
Michigan. I bet you that Marina is saying, wait, you know another Marina? I mean, there's not a lot of them. I know a Marina.
I don't know any Marinas. Mm-hmm. I know the Marina District in San Francisco.
Bingo.
A few episodes behind, so this comment may be a little late to the party, but I always felt strongly about this, and I may have finally found someone who would have the patience to listen to my theory. Okay, get ready. It's theory time.
Okay.
On the question of favorite TV animals, remember?
Yes, I do remember.
I would like to submit Murray from Mad About You, and tied for a close second, Stinky and Nunzio from Dharma and Greg. They win my affection for being fairly accurate depictions of household pets on family-centered shows. As adorable and funny as Frasier's Eddie is, he is often only present in an episode if he's an integral part of the plot or a part of a bit or a gag. On the other hand, my favorite TV dogs, although often part of a punchline, have some plot lines centered around them, are often just part of the scenery. They can be seen resting their heads in the lap of a human character who absentmindedly pets them while sitting on the couch talking about something unrelated, or as Murray often was in the early seasons, napping on a love seat or chair in the background of the shot, not interacting with the actors at all. It must be expensive to have pets and their trainers on the set during shooting, so I particularly appreciate this extra effort to depict them as they exist in most households, always around, even if they're not the center of attention at a given moment. That being said, I must also admit that the Murray-centric The Last Scampi episode is one of my favorite sitcom episodes ever. Thank you for your patience. It's good to get this off my chest. Podcasting is therapy. It's why we're here, Marina in the 734. So there you go. Wow. And I think she answered her own question there, which is you got to be committed to this idea if you're going to spend the money on the animal and the animal handler and potentially having the animal like move and stuff in the background.
Right, which could mess things up.
Just to have them not be part of the show. But I do remember, I did like that about Mad About You, that they just had a dog and the dog was there and the dog was around and it wasn't always about the dog. The dog, it wasn't like the monkey on Friends, right? I mean, the dog was just a dog and he was there.
That is I'm so impressed by that question and answer of hers because it's so arcane, but it has a really great, I mean, it's a great self-contained theory.
Yeah.
That people actually have pets in their real life. So if we're depicting something on television, whether it's a comedy or not, that's supposed to be a representation of someone living a real life, you would have a dog in the background sitting on the chair. I think that's really interesting. And I remember that. Well, that was back in the days when NBC had money.
Yeah.
So like,
must see
TV. You can have two handlers if you want.
Warren Littlefield just pay that out of his pocket change.
Oh, they spill more than that. They spill animal trainers. They spilled that out of their pockets all the time back in the day. Yeah. Oh my God! Everything was number one then. Yeah, 10 trainers if you want.
Sure.
But I like that. I love the theory of like just a dog, and also like it's kind of cool to think and kind of funny. Like, all right, listen, dog. Like, don't get up. Just be a dog. Yep. Just lay. Be cool, man. Just method act.
Yep.
Sleep it off. Sleep it right there. Okay, you're sleeping there.
Mm-hmm.
You're not gonna get up and bark.
Dog
at
probably
the door.
Loved it.
My dog could never be on a show like that.
They probably fill that dog full of food. And then the dog just goes and lays down and is like, brr.
Oh, yeah. My dog can never.
That had to be a super mellow dog to do that.
Yes. Yeah.
So anyway, Marina, great. Good theory. Good job.
Yep.
Now it's not just off your chest. It's been released worldwide simultaneously.
Worldwide. And it's arcane. And it's amazing.
Okay. We've got some feedback from Sarah in the 317.
Ooh, now, where's
that? We've been talking to Sarah on Twitter.
Ah,
this is Indie Sarah.
Okay. Oh, yes. Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. So she's near David.
Yeah, she is. Right. She is in Indiana. It's Indianapolis and surroundings.
Oh, nice.
So
surroundings,
Sarah, she wrote a few tweets that I'm going to roll together here.
Mm-hmm.
Officially caught 35 episodes of TVTM in 1 week. I wrote her back and I was like, you need to detox now.
Yeah. You got to get
discovered us
out of your head.
She binge listened.
Ooh.
35 episodes in 1 week.
Wow.
I know. That's it.
Tremendous.
I hope she's listening to this one because and not saving up for the next 35 weeks and then listening right. to those in another yeah. binge.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give myself a little credit here. She goes on to write, a highlight remains Jason explaining the CSI and CSI Cyber stands for Cyber Internet. I made myself laugh at that joke. Cyber with an S for the second one, because why not? Yeah, she has two questions. One mm-hmm. is, who would write and star in a series about TV critics? Tim, any thoughts?
Wow. I just started to turn the bat on that one to hit that one deep, and then I held back. I checked my swing. Didn't want to say something that I might regret, that other critics might say, oh, that's not funny. So I held off on that.
A series about Alan Sepinwall would be just a reality series, and it would be like one of those Christmas logs. It would just be a shot of a keyboard and somebody typing on it.
Frantically.
Endlessly, yeah. forever, and just yeah. being insanely productive.
I always tell Alan, he's such a bad influence on everybody else.
No, well, he raises the bar too high, right? He's like, sure, it's easy to write thousands and thousands of words in about half an hour. No, it's not. Stop.
No, it's not. And the good thing is he's actually slowing down a little bit. He's actually, well, not slowing down. It's impossible. He's a machine. I don't mean he's actually real. He's just got like skin pulled over a
he's
metal.
He's a robot.
Yeah. But Alan has definitely joined the chorus of critics who are saying, look, there's just too much. There's literally too much.
Yep.
And he has pulled back on certain things. You know, I've even said every time he announces, like, you know what? I can't get to that. I'm always like, what? That's amazing. And so I want to give him a hug for that because he definitely sets the bar really high.
Yeah. I mean, he is announcing, you know, he did just announce his summer bonus work that he's doing
yeah.
just to
that
make extra
so annoying
extra
right.
work for himself
and, yeah like okay Alan do extra let's every time he did that in the past, which was like, let me go just I've got so much time I'm gonna re-review a show that's oh my god I want
yeah
strangle.
I'm gonna re-review the first season of The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah. Totally want to strangle him.
I feel like at the end, you know, he's gonna have great Sopranos. He's gonna have covered the whole you know, the whole show from end to end. And I really loved it when he redid The Wire, because that was great when I was watching The Wire for the first time, is that he went back and covered every season of The Wire. But
his next step is definitely fan fiction.
So you're going, yeah, you're in Austin and going to Banff, and Alan yes. Sepinwall, he is watching Sopranos DVDs and typing right
but
now.
I'll be
right
working,
now.
Just to be clear. That's
you're
work.
Working.
Yeah, yeah. It's just
you're
a different
working.
Kind of approach.
That's
so I don't know who would play our, I mean, clearly you'd have to have like, you know, like, I don't know. I would like George Clooney to play me. Could that happen? I don't have any melanin like he does. I do not have black hair.
He's too old to play you. How about that?
Nice.
How about that? You like that?
Nice. Yes. I do like how he's, you know, I have a well-documented man crush on him.
Hmm.
But he's, yeah, I loved him when he was on Dave Going Away. That was good, strong stuff. But yeah, I think you needed a little more ginger. Right? Somebody yeah. for me. I don't know. Maybe, what's his name from Homeland?
All right. We'll just cast Chris Pratt. Chris Pratt will be you.
The new lean Chris Pratt.
I will
yes.
say, though, you know who needs to run it? It's Armando Iannucci.
Oh, my God.
I want him to do the show about TV critics.
Oh, yeah. I love that guy. That's a, yeah. And by the way, Veep, outstanding Veep. This year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's always outstanding, but off the charts great this year.
Okay. So
and that was from Indie Sarah.
That was Indie Sarah in the 317.
I love her because, you know, it's about indie music. I think I think her and I bonded over Twitter over music.
So she has one more question, which is, I feel Carnival would have completed its intended run in today's TV climate. Do you agree? And what else do you think might have had a chance to survive?
Oh, disagree. Because I have some insight into that. Now, Carnival was one of the first series where, not the first, but one of the first where, I was becoming particularly keen as a TV critic in sussing out the future, the viability of it. And literally, you would be at these press sessions, and they'd be bloviating about their show and all these things that are amazing about it. And you're like, okay, where's it going? You know, where do you see it going? What's happening in the future? Whatever questions that they would be peppered with were variations on, okay, where are you in five seasons? And, you know, you show this amazing magic. Like, what can they do and what – and he had no answers, and it was a very famous, or I call it a famous implosion of a press event, because it was really clear he had no idea where it was going. And I think I wrote from there, don't even bother. This is never going to – this will never be concluded. And that I was totally true. I mean, I'll go back and look at it. I think if I find that review, it's in there. I'm like, don't even bother. This is this will never see the end. And it didn't do well. I like the ambition of it. But if you're going to be that ambitious, you have to know where it's going.
All right. So denied, Tim says to Sarah, no.
But I still love her.
Disagree. All right. Well, I've saved
She's
the best.
Hall of Fame, by the way, for listening to all.
Oh, man.
Binging these
things. That was that clapping you heard earlier. That was the standing O.
That was the standing O.
The 35 episodes.
Heroic effort.
All right. We're going to end with one more letter. This is the best letter we have ever received.
Wow. That is boastful.
Yeah. It's like a Russian novel. It's got like, it brings you up. It takes you back down. It's got like acts. It's got intermissions. It's amazing.
Okay. I'm going to sit back
right.
for this.
This is Amy in the 415.
Oh, the area code record.
Yeah. Born and raised in Mill Valley, where I am right at this moment.
Oh, pandering.
I know. No, well, like I said, she hits all the notes and notes you didn't know existed in this letter.
Okay.
So,
all right.
Without further ado, love, love, love the show. See again. This is such a great letter.
I love her.
Okay. Due to a career change, I have found myself in a new work environment that allows me to watch multiple hours of TV daily, and would like to offer up my services. Recently, I switched from my white-collar software-as-a-service job to a white-apron job and started a gluten-free bakery. When not fighting the evils of gluten bloating innocent bellies, I watch all TV from Veep to Call the Midwife to Ray Donovan. To demonstrate I am not all talk, I watched episode 2 of CSI Cyber and have offered up a review. After realizing the title qualified as 5 syllables of a haiku, I thought, why waste valuable podcast time reviewing shows of this train wreck caliber and allow me to humbly review them using only 17 syllables. In fact, I was doubly inspired as the crime was solved through a bacon-tasty sandwich and realized why not make lemonade from shows like these and have also matched the haiku with a matching recipe. That was one sentence, by the way. That was a very long sentence.
So good.
I am sure Tim could pair it with a nice wine. See, she knows everything here.
Hit that now.
So here's the CSI Cyber episode 2 haiku review.
Okay.
CSI Cyber. Crime. I can't even do it. Oh my God. It's so good. CSI Cyber. Crime solved through bacon sandwich. Gore forum brought down. Recipe. Hidden bacon computer panel frittata. See below. 3 eggs. A cup and a half of half and half. Half a cup of diced cooked bacon, half a cup of sliced mushrooms of your choice, half a cup of cheese of your choice. Whip eggs in half and half, add rest of the ingredient, pour in an 8x8 square baking pan, and bake at 375 for 45 minutes, and you will get the CSI Cyber Hidden Bacon Computer Panel Frittata. I'll put that in the show notes.
Wow.
To conclude, I would also like to offer up that I lived in Australia for 8 years and am married to a Brit, have 11-year-old twins, so I have an international, not age-specific, TV background. I am prepared to watch the worst of the worst shows and have been training by watching every episode of Happy-ish. Cheers, Amy. Is that not the best letter ever?
Took one for the team there with Happy-ish.
Well, you gotta. It's like training. It's like endurance training. You gotta have the highs and the lows, right?
You gotta get in there and say, "Oh my God, this is sucking the life out of me." Mm-hmm. Which is what happened. You saw my tweet that I went back in and I watched Happy-ish. I watched like just this past and, like the current one
and regretted it instantly.
Oh,
didn't
deeply
you?
Regretted it. Like I think I used deeply twice. Deeply regretted it. I really hate that show. It's so ridiculous, and it's not even bad in a CSI Cyber way. It's a self-indulgent masturbatory mess.
Mm.
There you have it.
They can use that on the DVD.
They probably will.
Who's that quote on the back? Self-indulgent masturbatory mess.
They probably will because they're now reduced to using. I should have noted this earlier. They're now reduced to using Twitter followers instead of critics to endorse a show. It's hilarious. It's always like. Johnny Drama at whatever Happy-ish, so good.
Yeah.
That's what it says. Or like, you know, whoever, blah 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 handle, and then Happy-ish. Oh my God, so funny. I was like, oh, you're so desperate right now. That is so below the standards of Showtime and what they should be doing to promote. That's Showtime waving the white flag.
Mm.
We are defeated. You have defeated us, nation's TV critics.
Defeated-ish.
Mm-hmm. Defeat. I'm feeling defeated-ish, yes.
Well, that's it. We've reached the end. You should go have some more tacos.
I'm going to do that. Thank you.
And thanks to everybody out there for listening. We'll be back next week with another fresh edition of the TV Talk Machine. So we'll see you then. Goodbye, everybody.
Okay.